We will continue our cursory review through 1 Samuel. If you recall, Dan skipped what he referred to as lesson 4 and saved that for this week since he was traveling. So we will be looking at 1 Samuel chapters 14 through 17, which most of you probably know and realize that that includes the story of David and Goliath. So if you want to open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 14, we'll begin there this evening. I sort of feel like this is like a sign that not to go over time tonight. So let's start with some context. Let's go back about 300 years. God has delivered on his promise to Abraham. The children of Israel have conquered the promised land. They've entered into that promised land, but they made a mistake. What was their mistake? What did they not do that they were supposed to do? They didn't conquer it. They didn't annihilate. They didn't drive out all the inhabitants. And as a result of that, they fell into worshiping those gods that angered God. They got into this pattern. What's that pattern they fell into? Unfaithful, then faithful. They were unfaithful. It angered God. God allowed them, allowed their enemies to conquer them. They cried out to God. And then who did God provide for them? What were they called? Judges. And so the judges delivered them from their enemies. They were faithful to God. They were faithful to God for how long? Till those judges died. And then the pattern continued. And it continued for about 300 plus years. Who was the last judge? Samuel. Okay, and he was the last. Why was he the last judge? All right, they wanted a king. They went to God. They said they wanted a king. Who did Samuel actually try to put in place? He served as a judge, it says in 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 15. He served as a judge all of his life. Who did he try to put in place to replace him? His sons. What was the problem with his sons? They were corrupt. And so the people went and said, your sons are corrupt, so they can't be judges, and we want a king. And so they rejected God's plan, so God gave them a king. Samuel tried to warn them about the problem of having a king. What were some of the things he said was a problem? 1 Samuel chapter 8, he said, hey, if you have a king, here are some of the issues. What was some of the issues? What was, you got Richard, what? They're going to tax you. They're going to tax you. What was one of the other issues with kings? What were they going to form? Form an army. So that leads us to 1 Samuel chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14. Look at the end of 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 47. So Saul established his sovereignty over Israel and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab, against the people of Ammon, against Edom, against the kings of Zoab, and against the Philistines. And wherever he turned, he, New King James Version says, harassed them. Does anyone else have a different word or phrase? Sorry? Vexed, okay, vexed. Any other words? Harassed, vexed. Anyone have English Standard Version? Inflicted punishment. Any other versions? ESV says routed. He harassed, he vexed, he routed, they inflicted punishment over them. And he gathered an army and he attacked the Amalekites. He delivered Israel from the hands of those who plundered them. Hop back down to verse 52. Now there was fierce war with the Philistines all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him for himself. What was Saul doing? What was he doing? Formed an army, and what did he go do? Drafted everyone he wanted, went to war, expanded the kingdom. Okay? All right. Let's go to chapter 15. All right. So, God decides that he wants to punish the Amalekites. And so he, for the way that they treated the Israelites when they were coming out of Egypt. And so, it says in verse 2, the Lord of hosts says, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came from Egypt. And so he says, now go on and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and do not spare them. Is there any ambiguity in that instruction? Seemed pretty clear what Saul was supposed to do. All right. But just in case he didn't understand it, it continues, kill both man and woman, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. Was anything supposed to be alive when they were done? All right. So Saul forms everyone up, forms up his army. Verse 7, Saul attacked the Amalekites. In verse 8, he took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive. And he utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. Did Saul do what God told him to do? Okay, so what's God's reaction to this in verse 11? All right. He was so upset that he regretted what? Regretted making Saul a king. And he says that he's turned his back from following me, and he has not what? Not performed my commandment. All right. Samuel goes to see Saul. What does Saul say to him? Blessed are you, Lord of hosts. I have what? Perform the commandment of the Lord. How does he think he performed the commandment of the Lord? He thought he... Do any of you have any idea how he performed the commandment of the Lord? It sure seems that way. That's not what he thought. He thought 90% was as good as 100%. I'm pretty sure we could, you know, go and find just 10 random people at Publix and give them that commandment and then show them what he did. And I think the 10 people would probably tell you he didn't do what he was asked to do. But in Saul's mind, he thought he performed the commandment. I love what Samuel says. What does Samuel say after Saul says, blessed are you, Lord of hosts, I perform the commandment of God. What does Samuel say? What's all this? It's all this bleeding of the sheep. What's all this, sheep. Okay. So Samuel says to him, in 18, the Lord sent you on a mission. He told you to go utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. That's what God told you to do. And so Saul answers him and says, but I have what? In verse 20. But I have what? Obeyed the voice. Is he just stupid? I mean, what is wrong with Saul? I have obeyed the voice. So I performed the commandment of the Lord. I obeyed the voice of the Lord. I've gone on the mission that the Lord sent me on. I brought back Agag the king. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. Now, I don't know how he defines utterly destroying, but it sure doesn't seem like he utterly destroyed them. He's doing what he thinks is right. Now, he has somehow rationalized this. He has somehow rationalized this. How did he rationalize it? How did he rationalize it? What was Saul going to do with all those sheep? Those good sheep, what was he going to do? He was going to sacrifice them to God. And in his mind, he was doing something that was good for God. Because what did God like? Did God like sacrifices? Was it good to honor God with sacrifices? It's good. Is that what God asked him to do? All right. That's not what God, he was not being obedient. So what does Samuel say? That's exactly what Samuel says in verse 22. Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as he does in obeying the voice of the Lord? Yeah, sure. God likes sacrifices. He likes burnt offerings, but he doesn't like it more than obeying him. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. So he ends verse 23 and says, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. And so in verse 24, it finally registers with Saul that he has sinned, that he's transgressed from the commandment of the Lord. But it's too late, right? And what does Samuel tell him? What's going to get ripped from him? What's going to get ripped from Saul? Being king, right? And he says to him again, in verse 26, that the Lord has rejected him from being king of Israel. The verse in 35, the chapter ends, that he is going to be rejected as king. What does this tell us? What lesson do we have in this chapter about what God's expectations are when he gives us a command? You better obey it. Right? There is no ambiguity. When God gives you a command, there is no ambiguity. Do it like he wants you to do it. Is there any room for interpretation? Do we get to interpret what God means? Do we get to say, well, maybe God sort of meant that, but we can kind of put our spin on it? Can we help him? Yeah. What's interesting about this was he thought about something that was righteous, right? Burnt offerings was righteous, and he wanted to do something that was righteous, but that's not what God was asking. God was very clear what he wanted him to do, but that's not what God wanted, right? And because it was not what God wanted, God wasn't happy with him. Yeah, they're great animals. Let's not let them go to waste. Let's use these. They're so good. Let's use them to honor God. He also rationalized it. He also allowed himself to rationalize the behavior. But it is a good lesson for us that God has expectations. And I think what Samuel says in verse 22 is very helpful. The Lord has great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices, but obeying the voice is better. Okay, so now that God has decided that he is going to rip the kingdom from Saul, we need to anoint a new king, okay? And so Samuel needs to go find a new king. He goes to the house of Jesse to find a new king. Does anyone remember when Samuel goes to anoint anoint Saul in chapter 9? And he comes upon Saul the first time. What is the observation he has about Saul? What are the two characteristics that we learn about Saul? What are the two things that we see in chapter 9, verse 2 about Saul? He's tall. In fact, he is taller than what? Any man in Israel. And what else do we learn about him? He's handsome. All right, so let's see what we learn about David. In David, when after Samuel goes through the brothers, and he finally, David is finally brought before him in verse 11 and 12, what do we read about David? He's what? He's a boy. He's ruddy. What does ruddy mean? Anyone? That's not a term we use today. What's it mean? Anyone have a different? Red hair? Ruddy? Healthy, glowing, young. All right, what else? He's got what kind of eyes? Beautiful eyes. And he's what? He's good looking man. Good looking young boy. Okay? Kind of like what we learned about in Saul. Saul was handsome. David's good looking. What else do we learn about the relationship as we continue on in this chapter? The relationship between Saul and David. Eventually, extremely jealous. But what do we... Saul and David eventually become linked. And who is David to Saul? What is David become? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. It's a threat. But what... He has a job. What is David's job? What? He plays music. Okay. So Saul, it says in verse 14, he has the spirit of the Lord departs from Saul. He has a distressing spirit. He's troubled. And what is David play? The harp. And so they send for David. David comes. He plays the harp, right? And it soothes Saul. And so he's the harp player. What else? What's his other job? What's his other job for Saul? He's a harp player. What else does he do? Sorry, I didn't hear it. Armor bearer. So he helps prepare him for battle, putting on his armor. Okay? So he's his armor bearer. He plays the harp. And so he somehow gets linked up with Saul. Doing those things. Okay, so now we're in chapter 17, the chapter you all know well, and our trick is, how do we study a chapter you all know really, really well, and a story you all know really well, and try to pull something out of it? So let's go through the setting of it really quickly, and then try to find what can we pull out of this story you all know really well. So you've probably seen movies that depict something along these lines pretty well, right? There's a mountain, and it's the Philistine army and the Israelite army, and what do they do every day? They're lining up in battle array. What does that mean? Philistine army lines up on one side of the mountain, Israelite army lines up on one side of the mountain, and who comes out to challenge the Israelites? Goliath. Okay, what do we know about Goliath? He's a giant, huge. Okay, and he is referred to by Saul when David says, "I'm going to go fight him." He's referred to Saul. Saul says, "You're just a youth," and he is a man of war since his youth. So, Philistines are in battles all the time. He is the champion. Means he's pretty good at this, okay? He's been doing it for a long time, and he's huge. How huge is he? 9.5 feet tall. Okay, so it gives us it in cubits. You go through, you know, a cubit, you all know, right? Tip of middle finger to your elbow, depending upon how that gets measured. He's anywhere from 9.5 feet to 11 feet tall, okay? And he is, obviously, he's got bronze helmet, bronze coat of mail, bronze armor on his legs, bronze protection on his shoulder, shield, sword, spear. He has a coat of mail. It talks about it's 5,000 shekels. One shekel is about 4 ounces. That means that coat of mail weighed about 125 pounds. Okay, it is heavy. Gives you an idea how strong he is. Okay, and so he goes out and they go out in battle array, and what's he saying to them? He goes out in verse 8, and he says, why have you come out to the line of battle? Am I not the Philistine? And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourself. Let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him, kill him, then you will be our servants and serve you. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man that we may fight together. How often, how many times has this happened?
Every day.
How many times a day? Go to verse 16. How many days has this happened? 40 days, and how many times a day? Twice, in the morning and night. So how many times has he gone out and done this? 80 times. 80 times he's gone out and challenged the Israelite army. And how has the Israelite army reacted to this? Scared, right? Verse 11, Saul and Israelite army, they hear these words, and they are dismayed. They're greatly afraid. It says in verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw him, they fled with fear. They're dreadfully afraid. Does the Israelite army have anyone to send out? Was the Israelite army in a lot of battles? Do you think they had a champion? Apparently not one willing to go out and fight Goliath. So Saul has to try to find a champion. He has to try to find someone to go out and fight him. What does Saul do to try to convince someone to go fight him? Saul tries to bribe someone. Do y'all remember this in the story? He tries to bribe someone to go out and fight Goliath. What's he offer them? He offers them three things. If you go out and fight Goliath, I'm going to give you three things. What were the three things? Anyone remember? Riches, my daughter, give you my daughter to marry, and what's the third? No taxes. All the way back then it worked. Okay? Remember what Samuel said? Hey, Richard said it. What's the problem with kings? They're going to tax you. All right? But if you go and fight Goliath, you get a tax exemption. All right? It's not just important today. It was important back then. All right? So I'm going to give you riches. I'm going to give you my daughter to marry. I'm going to give you a tax exemption. Okay? That still didn't work. All right? Couldn't get anyone to go fight Goliath. All right. So who shows up on the scene? David. Was asked to go see his brothers, and when David goes to see his brothers for the 81st time, he hears Goliath coming out and challenging the Israelite army. And when he hears them being challenged, he asks. In verse 26, you know, what's going to be done? What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine, in verse 26, to take away this disgrace from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? This phrase, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Why does he say that? Why does he reference it that? What does that mean, uncircumcised Philistine? Yeah, what? Not unworthy, not one of God's people. It's interesting. Look a few verses ahead, verse 25 above, When the men of Israel were dreadfully afraid, they said, have you seen to David this man who has come up? Surely he has come to defy who? Who is Goliath defying? Israel. Who does David say he's defying? God. So no one's willing to fight him except David. So David says to Saul, verse 33, verse 32, that he'll go fight him. And Saul, we mentioned this earlier, he says, you're not able to go fight him. You're a youth. He's a man of war from his youth. What's David tell him to convince him that he can go fight him? What story does he tell him? Yeah, I've killed a lion and a bear. I can take him, right? Don't worry about it. I can take him. And so Saul acquiesced, right? I got no one else. So, you know, no one was willing to, you know, take my bribe. So I'm gonna send him out. And so what's Saul try to do? To try to prepare him for battle. He wants to send him out prepared. So what's he try to get David to do? Put on his armor, right? Doesn't work, right? And so David can't walk in it, so he takes it off, and then, you know, he takes the stones. So then he goes out to fight the Philistine. He lines up, and of course, in verse 42, Goliath's not happy about this. He looks at him, he's got disdain, he's insulted. He says in verse 43, am I a dog? This is the best you can throw at me. He cursed David, and he says in verse 44, you know, come on, I'm going to give you your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, right? Trash talks him a little bit. David goes through this whole speech. My favorite part of the speech is kind of midway in verse 46. He trash talks him back, and he says, well, this day I'm going to give your carcass, I'm going to give the carcass of the Philistines to the birds of the air, right? So he kind of ups it a little bit. So we sort of know the end of the story, right? Okay. All right. Why? So none of us are going to go up against an 11-foot giant in battle array. So what can we take from the story? What lesson do we get from this story? God will take care of you. Okay. What else? Spirit was upon David. Okay. Why was David successful and Saul and the army not? Faith, belief, trust in God. Why didn't Saul and the rest of the army trust God? They weren't fully convicted. Was there any reason for them not to trust God? Why didn't they trust God? You know, I set you all up for this, right? Go back to, what was the first thing we read in chapter 14? What was Saul and the army doing? Who did they go fight? Huh? They fought Moabs and Ammon and Edom and the king of Zoab and the Philistine and the Amalekites. They fought everybody. They fought everybody. And what's it say they did? They harassed them. They vexed them. They inflicted punishment on them. They routed them. They won the battles. And yet, now here they are, and Goliath comes out, and they're dismayed, they're disheartened, they run, they flee, they're afraid. Why? They saw the physical obstacle and Goliath was defying who? Who was it defying? Sorry. the whole army, Israel. Who did David see them defying? God. Go back to chapter 17. When David shows up, they were defying the armies of the living God, right? And so when he goes to Saul and he says, "Hey, I can go take this guy because I killed some lions and bears." It wasn't that he went and killed lions and bears. Look at what he said. He said, "I can go kill this uncircumcised Philistines," in verse 36. "Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistines will be like one of those, seeing as he has defied the armies of" who? "Living God. The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, he will" what? Okay. Go look at the speech he gave to the Philistine. When Goliath says, "You're coming at me, I'm going to give your flesh to the birds," David says, "You're coming to me with a sword and a spear. I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, who you're defying. This day, the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day, I will give your carcass of the I will give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines and the birds of the air and the wild of the beasts, so that all the earth may know that there is a God of Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you in our hands." Who was fighting the Philistine? God. Because David trusted God. Now, I want you to go back to chapter 16 really quick. How much time do I have? 5 minutes, okay. All right. When Samuel went to anoint Saul to be the king, you all gave me the right answer. When Samuel went to see him, he was the most handsome person in Israel. He was the tallest in Israel. When he went to anoint David, he was ruddy, he had beautiful eyes, he was good looking. But we skipped the verses when Samuel was trying to anoint David's brothers. Right? He was trying to anoint his brothers, and God stopped Samuel and says, "Not these." Right? Look up in verse 7. He said, "The Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearances or his physical stature, because I have refused him," the him being the older brother, "for the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at" what? "The heart." So I'd submit to you that the problem with Saul and the army, they did not trust God because they didn't have the right what? Who had the right heart? And so he trusted God because he trusted God, and because he knew who was going into battle. It wasn't him. It was God. And that's why he defeated the Philistine. Look back at chapter 17. Sorry, I know I'm flipping you around a little bit. Look at what David actually said when he went to tell Saul he was going to go fight. Verse 32, "Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go fight with this Philistine." This all came down to his heart. And that's why God picked him to be the next king, because he saw into his heart. It was not about physical appearance. It was not about the fact that Saul was the tallest, the most handsome. David was good looking. It wasn't why he got picked. He got picked because of his heart. It's because of his heart. And because of that, he trusted God. He was the only one that trusted God. And because he was the only one that trusted God, he saw what was happening. This Philistine, this uncircumcised Philistine, was defying God. He was insulting God, and he wasn't going to stand for it. And he knew that when he went into battle, he wasn't facing a 9.5 to 11 foot, warrior who'd been a warrior since his youth. He was facing someone who was defying God, and it was God who was going to face off against him. And that's why he could go in with no armor. That's why he could go in with five stones. Any comments or questions? Yeah. Yeah, he did not, he was not, yeah, he seems to show up and see it pretty clearly, right? It's interesting. They, for 80 days, they sat there and saw this. He showed up and he's like, what's going on? Who's defying God this way? He didn't, it took him hearing it one time and he was pretty much ready to go into battle. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was setting them up. Why do you think, real quick, why do you think that armor didn't fit David? I remember like coloring sheets of this when I was a kid. I know why we think it didn't. And it's, we all look at him, we're like, he's a youth, right? That's what Phil, that's what Goliath said, you're a youth. What was, what was another reason it didn't fit him? Yeah. He didn't need it, but you're all right, but I'm thinking more definitive. Saul was bigger than anyone else. Saul was bigger than anyone else, right? He was the tallest of everyone, right? We have no evidence of this, but I just want to put something in your mind that I've never thought about until I studied this. Who may have been Israelite's champion? I don't know, but it's sort of interesting, isn't it? Who was the biggest, strongest for Israel? Who never was willing to go to battle? It's interesting, right? In verse 11, it says, when Goliath challenged them, when Saul and Israel heard this, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer. I'm sure they didn't send their king out to fight battles, but it is a little bit interesting that the biggest one for Israel didn't go out. All right, thank you for your good participation. Dan will be back next Wednesday.